Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com. Go check out our products. If you want to interact, go over to the Hyperclean Specialist Group on Facebook. Great place to go over there. Nick, we're going to do some buy and sell. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and buy. You ready? You ready for this buy? Gran Turismo. Right? I talked about that when it first came out. I love the idea of video game guy gets to go drive a car. I was watching that, right? Enjoying the story, enjoying the movie, enjoying everything about it. And then I see, right, because we'll take a little break, open up a social, see some comments, and I just go, wow, I guess if gamer guy can go car guy, I guess polishing guy can go science guy. And I go, wow, I'm buying. I'm buying that detailing has now gotten to the highest esteem that science is now involved. I'm in. I'm buying.
I thought you were going to say I was watching the movie and I'm old and I fell asleep. I actually thought that was going to be your buy and sell. That's pretty interesting. Obviously, we use the word science fairly loosely in this world of car care, it seems. But to each their own. I'm glad everybody has their opinion, and you and I just give a smile and move on about our day, huh?
Yeah. I wasn't great at science, so I can appreciate when people educate me, So it's wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
We call that bro science. So here's mine today. So we're talking about exhaust last week. What was that, Saturday's episode?
Mm.
So guy across the street at my shop, they run like a restoration business, clean up, stuff like that, just a really good small business, been here a long time, evidently in the business park. I start hearing the last couple of days this really loud exhaust starting up. The owner got a new vehicle and it's an Escalade V. I don't know if you've heard those things, open and going, they're loud. So knocks on the door. Actually this morning, and he goes, hey man, can you come check out my new vehicle? I need to get some tint. I need to get some things done to it. I go, oh, okay. I said, yeah, man, I've been hearing you starting that thing up. Sounds pretty sweet. Now it's loud. He goes, yeah, this thing may go back. We're getting complaints from neighbors. My wife's complaining. I go, how do you like it? He goes, it's pretty loud for an Escalade. And I go, but it's fast. He goes, I'm pretty old, so don't know that the speed's really what I need. I really wanted it. I'm a Cadillac guy. They had this, special V series come out. So I say to him, I said, hey, funny enough, we did a podcast over the weekend because I've talked to him a lot. I go, are you particular about how this sounds? He goes, I didn't think I would hate it, but I'm growing to hate it. And I go, let me guess, talking on your cell phone in the car? He goes, how'd you know? I said, dude, I've been doing this so long. He goes, yeah, people will complain. I'll have to put people on mute. So I'm constantly hitting my phone when I'm not talking. And so it kind of, again, goes to Saturday's episode. And it's just funny when these, it's like just luck of the draw. Sometimes it happens when we talk about stuff, we'll get a phone call or we'll see somebody. And to hear him, he's like, I really like owning it, but it's probably going to have to go back because it doesn't fit my lifestyle. And I don't really like riding around with it, with how loud it is, because of the things I got to do in my car. And I get on a lot of meetings and different things. And so he started up in front of me and he looked at me, he goes, just tint it. And I'm going to have to make a call after that. He goes, I don't know if this thing's going to make it the summer.
Good for him, right? Because like you said, at least he's now going to make a stance. He's either going to take it or not. How many people just keep their cars around because they're like, oh man, I just, so
yeah. And that's what he said. He's like, luckily I'm in a position I can just do what I want. I'm like, yeah, I hear you.
Most of us look at our payments and go, damn it.
I can't get out of this thing.
I saw in the group, which was fun, Brandon posted that he went to the mothership, right? He made it there. And the comment was, I thought Mecca was in Colorado. So today, in reverence of that, of my trip to Mecca, New Belgium 1985 Mango IPA. Don't worry, Nick. I'll save one for you next week. While you do get to try what I am loving as one of the most favorite ranches and the most favorite thing that I've been eating lately, this is one of our local pizza places from Mazio. So I'm not sure if you're a ranch guy or not, but we're going to be having some pizza, some Mazio's ranch, and some IPAs with mango. You ready?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody that doesn't know what Marty's talking about, we may take a podcast break next week because, hey, HQ is buzzing. I got to fly into HQ Easter Sunday, which has created a little tension in the Walters household that I got to leave on
Listen,
Easter
Sunday. Listen, if I'm Tommy Tank, you got to admit that story and go.
I had no idea it was Easter Sunday.
Tommy. I mean,
like. Yeah, I had no idea it was Easter Sunday. So I booked the trip. Marty and I got a lot of stuff to do next week. Exciting stuff, like nothing negative. We got some launches we got to film. We got some things we got to film. We got to do a lot of things at HQ. We got to start designing and building out some things at HQ. We got all kinds of meetings next week. And I'm like, well, if I get in there Monday, I won't get there till 11 or 12 or whatever. So I'll fly out Sunday at like 3 o'clock and then I'll just be there. Send my itinerary to the family. So you're leaving on Easter Sunday. Boy, what a loss. You can change your flight. I said, I'm not changing my flight. I said, I got too much to do, and here we are. I'm just sacrificing for the crew here.
Oh, that's what you call it. Okay.
So I mean, I got to tell myself something.
I'm sacrificing.
I got to tell myself something.
So I've got this beer, and I've got listen, there was a guy standing in front of the cooler at the liquor store, and I almost took a selfie and sent it to you, and it was our man, Troy Aikman. Now as a cover booster boy.
He owns that company.
Oh, he owns it. Okay. I haven't looked into it. So I grabbed a six pack. I was like, yeah, all right. We're going to have to play around with that too. So yeah, the Troy Aikman beer is in the beer fridge here at HQ, chilling up waiting for you. You know what else I saw? This was cool. And it was a rare sighting. It's almost like, well, Tesla truck is becoming that rare sighting now, right? Great to see Cookie with Nick. He had a whole line of them he was working on. It was cool to see. But when people start posting that they see a Tesla truck out, right? Do you get those? Do you see those randomly ones? How many have you seen?
I've had one in the shop. We had a guy that had the bed already, the bed cover was already malfunctioning. Dropped it off. We did some tint. He wanted us to fix the bed. And I looked at him and I go, that ain't us. This isn't the Tesla service center. I'm assuming that thing's going to be broke for the next 12 months at least. I've seen a lot. Not as many as I thought I'd see. Because we usually do get a lot of Teslas here from S to all of them. You know, we get them pretty early because of our relation to California and you know, the kind of wealth that's here. I haven't seen as many as I thought I would, but I have seen a fair amount.
If somebody sees them, though, out in the wild, they're definitely taking a photo, putting them on social media, and it's fun to see. Also, what's fun to see out in the wild, which is what I'm getting to, is listen, we kind of joke about truck guy, right? And there's plenty of truck guys where you go, yeah, man, I get what you did there, but, you know, at least here in the Midwest, we always have the joke about, well, what are you trying to, you know, cover up there, buddy, you know, right? Yeah, like, there's always that joke. So you get after truck guy for that, but there's a truck guy that builds it out that I actually have a lot of respect for. We're seeing more and more coming out of the woodworks is the campers. I mean, probably not over for you, but Midwest, as spring starts going more in the summer, like, every weekend, you're going to have people up and down the highways. Campers are out. Have a good time with, you know, the Nissan truck guy or, you know, listen, I don't mean to give too much crap to Toyota truck guy, but, you know, they're pulling their pop-up camper, right? But the real respect, right, that you don't see very often is that F-350 big old beast, F-250, a dually, whatever, a big old truck that is pristine. They have that paint looking good, and everything then matches
what it's pulling. That's real commitment. That's real commitment.
And you can see, I mean, like I said, it's as rare as Tesla truck guy, right? Like, it's rare. But when you see that guy going down the road, you're like, you almost want to hats off him, right? Like, there's got to be a truck driver doing this. There's got to be something. There's got to be something for this rare phenomenon of the, and most people don't realize he's rolling in half a mil down the highway.
Oh, between easily.
Easily between his vehicle and what he's pulling behind. Like, it's crazy how much they tie up.
Yeah, I mean, that can be $750,000 just driving past you. Yeah, when they commit to that level, when they go, hey, I got this red truck, then I'm going to have a red camper, then I'm going to have a red car that I'm pulling behind the red camper, or whatever they decide to do, or the toys match the paint on their truck. Hey, they've gone whole hog there. In the Midwest, that's what you guys say. They say, "Hey, we're committing. We're doing this right." Hey, that guy is definitely the level
below is the boat guy, and you can find it in bass. Like, if he's a bass fisherman. You can find that, right? It's going to be that F-150, right?
Yeah, yeah, F-150 bass boat. They all match. Yeah, no, I got a buddy who's a big bass guy in the Midwest, and everything matches, and it has for. Since he was 25 years old, right? Like, when he finally got some money, you know, was working hard, putting a lot of hours in, everything was leveraged to the tilt at that point, but he's always matched, always.
Yeah. So you got to tip your hat, right? Never for you though, right? You're never going to grab some fifth wheel, throw it on the back and cruise the States. Never a dream for you, huh?
No. It's just, I can see, if things aren't as easy as they are now, right? If I really want to go to the woods, I can Airbnb a cabin in the woods, which is to me the same thing as going in a camper that is your living room. I mean, that's not camping to me. I'll absolutely go camp in a hunting situation, have for a lot of my life, but just dragging my living room around with an F-350 or a big Dodge Ram dually, that's not for me.
All right, so we see the people, overlanders, right? Because those are really cool, right? Like,
yeah, they're real cool.
Those are real cool. But you got, like, Jeep guy that wants to be the overlander guy, right? Like, yeah. It never crossed your mind when you had the Jeep, like, hey, let me go out and crawl up on top and pitch a tent to this. And, like, I just have a little respect for using some vehicles in some of these creative ways to go out and enjoy nature. Like, even to laugh at Jeep guy with a tin on top, or you got plenty of truck people that are starting to do that now. They got tunnel cover truck, right? Like, people will do that with their tunnel cover or the big, you know, the painted cover, right?
Yeah. A lot of different people will try. I think that's a different camping, right? Those people are usually out in the elements. They didn't drag their living room around with them. I camp for a certain reason. If I'm on a hunting trip, I'll camp. Like, I don't do a lot of, like, I'm going to camp just to camp. It's not interesting to me. I see why people are into it. You know what I mean? I can see why they're in that position. They're like, hey, that's my hobby. I like to go out into the wilderness. I hike a lot, or I do this, or I go out to this certain lake and I fish, and you got to go back into the weeds to get to that. I understand all of that. It's just not for me.
That was me, I think, in my before 30. How about that?
Yeah. It seems like that might have been pre-30 for you.
Yeah. Like, some of my favorite memories of college were when I would sneak away and I went in. I was at school in Arkansas, right? So we had a lake 7 minutes away, and there was you find the best little fishing spot that you could, and you got an hour.
I love fishing.
Yeah. Just an hour to go do something, right? Be out and get. That's why I said pre-30. I don't know where I find that even now at 45 to 60.
I've been to Tulsa recently. I got to tell you, it's a lot of concrete. So I don't, not like you're exactly living.
We used to have back in the day, right? This is fun about living in a town for so long. Some of the best fishing was at 81st and Sheridan, which is now a Walmart. So,
man, Walmart took my fishing hole.
took over fishing hole, right? Like, actually went to high school with a kid whose dad who owned the area. So we would go out and fish that pond. Like, it was a lot of fun.
I missed that. Yeah, that was a lot when I was young. This is probably the case in Tulsa. You'd have some people that had pretty big ponds at their house.
Yeah.
Right. It was a lot more common than it is now, right? Because most of those people sold the land off and, you know, then they moved out of that house. But yeah, I mean, that was some of the best memories that I had.
So we've talked about this. This is the interesting part, though, whether you take your Jeep and you go back in the area. If you listen, for me at that time, it was a rodeo, which is we talk about the one that got away. Like, that is still, I don't wish I still had it, but I just loved that vehicle, right? Like,
those
are
cool
great
for a
vehicle.
Spot, too. Those got a lot of play for a long time.
Absolutely. So, you know, we see inside the group, which was awesome to have, was cleaning up, right? Like, it goes, hey, Christopher, he posts this photo. Like, hey, listen, I love to go wheeling. We call it mudding. You don't put the G on it. It's I-N, mudding. That's what we call it around here. But he calls it wheeling. It was all dirty, all nasty. This must be Louisiana. It's the way they call it. All good. Goes, grab some TRX, make sure everything's cleaned up before he goes. And he is ready now to enjoy his vehicle as he goes. But we see so many of the people in this off-road world that they just keep it all dirty as like it's supposed to be dirty. So kind of hats off to Christopher that, like, and the people that do get them cleaned back up.
Yeah, I think you out here, you kind of have, you know, it's a lot of desert, right? A lot of desert runs. People, you know, that's what they do. They will take a camper out to the desert, side-by-sides, trucks, you know, go out there and enjoy their time. There's a 50-50. 50% of them are going to bring them back and clean them up. 50% of them are just going to leave them that way till the next weekend and the next weekend and the next weekend. And a lot of those trucks and vehicles get traded in that not in such good shape.
Kind of when you've talked about class of ownership. You know, when we've talked about it in the past, you know, we think of it in vehicles, but we can definitely, if we want to take a perspective into the other part of the world, kind of is easy to then see that transpire and to go, okay, I can see that they have a class of ownership. Some have different class ownership of how they're going to care for their off-road, care for their off RV, care for their wheeling vehicle. And other people don't have as much class.
Yeah, we have a couple of Ford Raptors and a TRX that these guys go heavy duty hunting. Like, they go back, they'll drive all the way up to Utah. They'll go to Montana. They hunt a lot. But we have this group that all hunts together that the minute their vehicles get back, they are on the phone, text messaging, when can I fit this in? They will not go back hunting with it still dirty. We have a whole different class that we know own those vehicles that never clean them up, and they literally just trade them in at the end of every hunting season. They just beat it up, and they're like, here you go. And it's just different, right? But, you know, it is a thing that it's hard for all of us listening and you and I talking, we just don't treat our stuff that way, right? But you got to see why some people do. It's a lot of work for a lot of people to clean their vehicles up, and either you're going to do the work or you aren't. And it seems like those are the, in that world, there's those that care for it and those that don't. And there is no middle ground. And so it doesn't sit with guys listening to this that take care of their stuff or us, because we just don't do that.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. That's an interesting perspective, though, to get kind of look through and see what it might be in a different world. Listen, I don't know much about like the big truck world, like semi truck, show truck of that's even. Like, I don't know much about that, but I do know that I love seeing Donald's post where he and this truck, he goes out and buzzes it down, gets it all corrected, and then puts dose on it the next morning, and everybody swears it's the best thing they ever seen, and they win. Like, okay, I'm in, Donald. Like, that was awesome to see. Awesome to see. Interesting that one question, though, that some people asked inside the HyperClean Specialist group, and you know, we don't always like to talk about pricing because, right, pretty subjective to go, listen, we don't know what the situation is. It might be in a different town, different city, different state. Like, there's all kinds of different variables. But we got a guy that inside the group asked a question about, you know, his packages and shows everything. And he's trying to get into maintenance and really get into that. And I love it. He, though, ask these questions, and it seems like almost everybody, as you go down, in good spirits, but in good spirits, telling him, hey, man, you need to raise your prices. I looked at his price, and I go, wow, exterior, $220, gets 3 months of protection, a good polish. And I go, huh, right? So I can't be subjective because I would have gone, that seems like a good price for my area, you know, for what I need or for what I think maybe we should get. How do we know then if we don't want to say, hey, no, nobody else tell me what to do because you might not know my area. How do I know, though, if I should then raise my price? I'd listen, we go to the grocery store. Everything's rose, right? You can't go to any kind of gas station to fast food. Everything's high.
I think a lot of it is where you are in your career. Do you have a lot of people beating down your door? You know, I always kind of say the way that I knew I needed to raise my prices is we were fully booked and booking weeks and weeks out, right? That's when I raised my prices. I don't know that I ever had my prices correct or incorrect and certainly didn't have places to check that, right? We didn't have Facebook groups as we have now when I started. But I always look at this, man. If you're not detailing at least 40 hours a week full time and starting to build a backlog of business, it's going to be tough to raise your prices because there's some flaw in the system. Okay. You're either not getting
supply and demand.
Yeah. Supply and demand. Right. So that's the way I did it. And I see a lot of Facebook groups where everybody, and Brian's brought this up in his part of the world, and guys doing boats and RVs, and everybody's always asking how much I should charge. I think if people are in good spirits trying to give you some guidance, that's okay. But like you said, man, nobody knows your situation. Nobody knows your town. Nobody knows your selling ability. Nobody knows your marketing tactics and what's working and what's not working. You have to be the judge. First of all, you should base your prices on what's it cost me to do a detail. Break down your chemical costs to do a detail. If people actually did that, they'd realize how affordable it is to detail a car. So that's how I know most people don't do this exercise. And when I say most people, I mean like 99% of detailers and 99% of hobbyists who think things are expensive have never really said, how much does it cost me to decon a car properly? How much does it cost to actually polish a car? How much... And then work backwards off of what your total cost is to do one car and ask yourself how much you need to make to cover your bills and make this worthwhile for you. There's going to be some people, man, that are starting at zero and are in a really bad spot that making $25 an hour is going to be life-changing to them. We can't sidestep that. It may not be life-changing to you who's reading it because your perspective on things is you're in this point in your career or this point in your life, or you're a hobbyist and you're like, I'd never do this for $25. Well, guess what? This guy might be dead broke. Like he might be just steps away from being homeless. How the hell do you know? I don't know. And I certainly have seen people in that position that have to crawl out of a real hole. And if they could just find a way to make $25 an hour, 40 hours a week, their life would be changed. Okay. I also know that for me and my business, we would be out of business if I did that. So if I go and give them advice and say, hey, you need to find a way to make $200 an hour, am I really giving him helpful advice? I don't think that I am, which is why you and I have always steered clear of these definitive lines on pricing, right? I see guys in Michigan on, you know, these detailing groups who are getting a paycheck from a company and they're detailing and charging these outrageous prices. And they're like, everybody needs to raise their prices. Well, you left out the part that you work for somebody doing this, that you're getting a paycheck. So yeah, you can go and charge an astronomical price because you don't need the money. This guy might need the money, right? He might be on like death's door financially. You don't know. And certainly
percentage wise, when you've talked about percentage of how many detailers make under, what was it, under
27,000? Yeah. The average detailer makes $27,000 a year. And by the way, this is where we get into, this isn't Nick's opinion. This isn't Marty's opinion. This is labor statistics based on people filing their taxes. Okay. These are hard numbers that they literally plug in and say, this is a detailing business. Here's the 50,000 people. And here's what they averaged on their income tax. Okay.
How many detailers are going, yeah, don't we file. Got you, Nick, and the government. We didn't file all that cash.
Yeah, we didn't file it, which is fine, right? I mean, that's your decision. But I'll say this, that I get really concerned with guys going to the internet talking about their pricing. You and I have been concerned about that since we first started on these episodes. Right. And I'm not concerned because I think anybody has any ill will or somebody's doing something wrong. Everybody in our group was respectful and gave great answers. It's nothing about that. You don't know the situation someone's in. You don't know their skill level. You don't know the kind of work that they can put out. You don't know where they're at in their career. You don't know their home life. You don't know what bills they owe. Hell, this guy may be better off just making $20 an hour to get the creditors off his back. And I'm not saying this about our guy in our group who posted this. I'm saying I don't know anybody's story, right? And people need to get that perspective of, number one, you could be in a small town in the Midwest that has a bunch of wealth. You could be in a small town in the Midwest and it's the poorest city in America. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. How the hell are those two people going to charge the same? They're not. How are those two people going to give each other advice on pricing? They're not, right? It's like I tell people, if you go to Phoenix and you go to Houston and you look at their PPF business and those people are running their mouth about what people should do in the PPF business, dude, you're in the two most prime cities on the planet for PPF. Nobody else has your situation. It's okay. Like, I'm happy as hell for you guys. But you're telling everybody about what they should be doing in a PPF business. You got people walking through your door as walk-ins buying full front PPF. You know how many cities have that? Very few, right? So we get into this world, man, where everybody has to understand the perspective of nobody's in your situation, right? We all have an individual situation and we run. Now, are there some basics we can all learn as we grow a shop? Yeah, man, if you're trying to make less than $100 an hour, you're going to have a hard time making it as a shop, because I can just do the general overhead costs in any city and tell you you're way too low. And I can go to Los Angeles and say, if you're making less than $100 an hour, you're out of business quickly because of the cost of doing business there. So you have to realize, and we have to start having these conversations publicly, that, hey, man, real tough to talk pricing, real tough.
Absolutely. But is there a once a year, once a 2 years, you think there could be just a general, hey, every couple of years I need to raise X amount of percentage, like just a standard automated?
In the last 3 or 4 years, if you just wanted to keep up with inflation, you'd have had to raise your price somewhere around 25%.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just to keep up with inflation. And that means the inflation around you, not necessarily chemical costs. That means your insurance. I think our insurance with no claims doubled at the shop this year. Like, I had no claims. I never even talked to my insurance company for the whole year, and it doubled.
Fucking, I had a kick in the balls the other day. Property tax went up.
Oh, we're having this conversation. You know, people down in Texas. I mean, if you start looking at the property tax in Texas, it's almost as much as a mortgage. Like, you know, you just don't know everybody's situation. Like, people look at it. If you look at the last 3 to 5 years, if your prices aren't up somewhere between 25% to 40%, you're underwater from the last 3 to 5 years.
But most of us haven't raised prices 30% to 40%.
No. And so that's where you get into this. Hey, man, a lot of guys are working by themselves. They're willing to eat it or don't know that they're eating that. They're finding a way to make it work. There's a lot of people
making themselves in with everybody else and go, well, I just got to absorb it like everybody else is absorbing inflation.
Well, and by the way, not everybody's absorbing it. I mean, like you said, Walmart's not absorbing anything. You go in there, things have never been more expensive. You go into a grocery store, so businesses don't just absorb it. If you're going to run a legitimate business, you can't absorb costs. We have this conversation a lot. privately, and we're seeing some cracks in the detailing supply world. Let's call it that, from distribution to chemical manufacturing. And you know the people having the biggest problem are the people that were giving the largest discounts, the people that were giving free shipping on every order. Well, guess what? Shipping has more than doubled. In just the 3 years you and I've been together, shipping has more than doubled. So they weren't taking that into account. Costs on plastics and bottling and labeling and storage and boxes and packing supplies have all gone up. And so when SEMA came around, one of the biggest secret topics of SEMA were, which we shared on this podcast, were a lot of these warehouse distribution online companies were so pressurized because they not only didn't raise pricing, but they were still offering these discounts to come order from them, that I had people look at me and say, what do you think? And I said, I don't see how they make it out of the first quarter of next year. You know these conversations behind the scenes. And we've seen some, if they aren't actually collapsed now or on the verge of collapsing behind the scenes, because they didn't take into account what it cost to run their business. And so that's all I would ever say to anybody that owns a business. You better know what it costs to run your business. And then what is it going to take for me to actually profit on a level that this makes worth doing for me? And that's where you have the variance. Because again, some guy may be real happy with $25 an hour net. Other people may be only happy if they're making $250 an hour net. I can't really, how do I explain that spread to somebody if I don't know their story?
Good point. Good point. And the, I do remember those conversations and then seeing stuff that comes out after and what we see now of apologies and, oh, I meant to do that. And like, you just go,
yeah. And by the way, it was a huge topic at SEMA. Everybody in the know that was actually a decision maker inside companies that we know was like, hey, what we're hearing and what we're dealing with this company or that company or this individual or that company, it's not good. What have you heard? Can you help me? I mean, some of these people are owed a lot of money. You know, what the hell are we going to do? I said, well, you better get ready to write that loss off on your taxes is what you're going to get ready to do, because there ain't no money. You know, just like we talked about on Black Friday, man, you see 60% off on Black Friday. That's a cash grab. That is not good business. So I don't need to be in somebody's company to get a viewpoint that the math doesn't math, right? But when you're talking about a service-based business, the thing you have different is you're actually trading your time for money. So you don't have this hard good cost. And so now it's really difficult to tell somebody what they should try to make per hour. I know if I had to do it all over again where I would start, it would be that 85 to 125 an hour. Because I know the wear and tear on my body, I know, but that is real difficult for me to say to somebody who may be in such a financial pinch that they just need some money. I don't know how you reconcile those things.
I don't know either. I don't know how you reconcile. Listen, the other day I was chilling, going home, loving life as I'm headed home in the fatty caddy, and suddenly, vroom, vroom. You go, wow, love it when people are going crazy down the highway, right? Like that adrenaline of like flying, right?
Yeah.
I'm cool, right? Love it. Sometimes though, if you, when you start doing those weekend road trips to go chase, whether it's softball or soccer, you always get behind the guy that goes vroom. That's what I do. I let him go vroom. Yeah. And then I just put cruise control. Yep. He's the trap. You take it. Well, the other day, the vroom wasn't some guy I wanted to go put on the radar. The vroom was actually going the opposite way of, I think I counted eight cop cars, like 100, 120, who knows? I mean, flying down the road. And I just go, this has always been interesting. Yep. We know some guy that you had introduced to. I talked to you about him. He's a guy that worked at a dealership and then went and worked at a police department. And I know another detailer that went to work at the highway patrol. they talk about how you actually don't want to put on your sirens. It makes people freaked out. So it's better to just go as fast as you can because, hey, if people don't freak out and they think they're getting, you know, pulled over. So if you're not really trying to pull somebody over, you just go as fast as you can. And, you know, I said, well, what if people call in? They go, oh, well, our dispatcher knows, so he lets them know. Huh?
Yeah.
That seems right.
Yeah. No, I have a weird relationship with what goes on the highway with police officers. And just so I can give some background here, my stepfather has been a police officer for a very long time. My brother-in-law is a police officer, so I bust their nuts about this constantly.
You do have to kind of say that, right? Because if you don't, they'd be like, you're another basher, right? You can't be a blue basher.
Dude, I say this right to their face. One of the things about the highway, and this happened to me this morning, that I can't stand. So we have motorcycle cops basically roam the highway here. It's good enough weather, same in California, right? If anybody ever remembers the old show, I always call them Chips from the old. So I call them Chips cops. And a lot of these guys, I got some that are my clients. I got some that are friends that I know that, you know, so I got my buddy Joe here I'm close with. He's a cop. I bust their balls about this 24/7. So I have no problem doing it here. It should be illegal for cops to pull people over on the highway. Period, point blank, end of story. And let me tell you why. 8 o'clock this morning, I went and checked on my guys. I'm trying to drive to the shop. Busy rush hour traffic. It's completely to a standstill where we're parked. Everyone knows this feeling. Hey, hope somebody hasn't had a bad accident. Hope something bad hasn't happened. 99 out of 100 times, what do you pass by? A cop with somebody pulled over on the side of the road for speeding. I'm not saying don't pull people over on the side of the road, but we should have a rule in America. You go to the next exit, you get off the exit, you get out of the way of traffic, you pull into a warehouse, you pull into a Dunkin' Donuts, you pull into a Star, wherever you go to get out of the way of traffic.
America.
Now, I've had two incidents where cops have came up and given me lip for doing this. Not just on the highway, but on a busy road where I pulled in. They got me for speeding. I know they got me for speeding. I'm not still speeding. I'm either getting off the ramp to go into, like I said, a warehouse or empty parking lot or whatever, or in one case, I went to an empty restaurant parking lot, and guess what I got yelled at both times? Hey, you didn't stop when I turned my sirens on.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Hold on, Nick. You made that guy drive down to the next exit and get off of the highway?
Oh, dude. Do you want to get clipped by somebody on the highway?
Dude, that's inefficient. He's got to be ready for the next guy. What's your deal? You're in the way of progress and you're in the way of business here.
I mean, I'm thinking to myself, okay, man, I took us both out of somebody losing control on the highway or not paying attention and clipping your car, then clipping mine, then clipping you. And I just think it should be banned. You shouldn't be pulling, you should pull speeders over. I don't have any problem that I got caught speeding. Okay, I'm going to pay the ticket. But I should be able to pull somewhere where it's safe for all parties and we're not on the side of the highway where everybody's going 80 miles an hour. I just don't think that's a far reach thing. But both times they're like, you know, you didn't stop right when I put my sirens on. I said, buddy, I got us to a safe place. You're going to write me a ticket anyway. Okay. I wasn't speeding away. It wasn't like an OJ speed chase. I got over to the right lane. I was going 50 miles an hour or 35 miles an hour, and I literally went into the next place where a common sense made to go, and both times I got lip about it. And I'm like, I don't know. And I tell this to my brother-in-law, and he's like, well, you know, what you don't understand, you know, which is the typical line.
Listen, it's like, I'm about to give it to you, too. What you don't understand, Nick.
Yeah, what I don't understand is why you'd want to get clipped on the side of the road, which, by the way, if we all are on social media, how many times do you see a car get drilled on the side of the road? It should just be illegal. It should be illegal because it stops traffic and makes you upset, but it also is a safety issue.
But I joked, but I guarantee you that's the reason. It's inefficient. Like, taking too much time to go 3 more minutes to go do this when, hey, we get this handled. I've got my spot right here. Listen, there's been some education here. It's educating somebody that's not used to driving in this country of places and where to look for. And as the weather turns, everybody knows the motorcycle cops come out more. Is what it is. Like, and they, you know, the question was asked, well, oh, do they get paid more? Well, you know, I had a lot of cops that went through my car wash back in the day. We made sure to give them free car washes, which most car washes do. And that's where the joke of the most donut places do too, right? Like, it is true. Like,
most food places,
get cafes, and they can go to cafes. There are a lot of cops that continue to go to the same cafe over and over because of that reason. Like, they got a great job, and it's a great job. We're thankful for what they do.
100%.
Absolutely. Like, I'm glad they're doing it. Thank you. But let's cards on the table. They do talk about they have minimums, right?
Oh, they got quotas. They got quotas, man. let's all talk about it out loud.
How they have to reach the minimum. So, Nick, it's inefficient what you're talking about.
I decided today was going to be when I met my quota, and you just made me drive another 2 minutes. But yeah, I mean, look, the speeding, and I hope they're out there fighting crime and not driving somewhere to go eat when they're speeding at that level. But, you know, have I heard other stories? Sure, I have. Oh, I turned my sirens on in the middle of this intersection, so I'd have to wait at this long light or whatever. We're allowed to live in the real world, and I got no problem with it. Do whatever you want to do. But I do think there's a conversation about pulling people over on the freeway is not only incredibly dangerous, and I don't want to see them at risk or that person at risk, but there's just a better way. Like, I've driven around Tulsa with you, by myself. There's a ton of exits.
Having just a blast exit. Too, right? Doors off, EDM, we're getting killed.
I mean, come on, man. Like, I wish I could drive that fast legally. That'd be fun. I would enjoy that.
When you got pulled over, what'd you get a ticket for?
My fastest. Well, I got a ticket on a bet with a client that he ended up having to get me out of, and it was well over 100 miles an hour. But he bet me, and he was in the passenger seat, and he had to tell the cop that he bet me. And luckily, he's influential enough that it got handled. But yeah, that one, I was pretty nervous because I looked at him and I go, he goes, oh, no, I donate a lot of money. We'll be fine. I'm like, okay, just you're going to have to tell him you bet me. But I actually just did a funny thing about speeding. I just got a phone call from a customer that his new car doesn't go fast enough because he can't get it above 140. He's like, this thing's a hunk of crap. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting way to talk about such an expensive car. But okay, man, we'll help you get rid of it.
So 100 plus. Yeah, my 47 and a 40 doesn't count towards that. But.
No, I've never been lucky enough. Actually, when I drove to Arizona on a work trip for HyperClean, I did get a ticket, and it was very, very suspect with very little over the speed limit. So, yeah, that was probably my worst situation. And the guy just laughed about it, too, so made it even more fun.
So 100 miles per hour. You originally had a vehicle in that only had 100 miles.
Yes, sir.
This is always fun to, a lot of us will grab vehicles and we could say, hey, you know, this vehicle's only got 100 miles and that could go in one direction or the other. Oh, you know, the amazing things about this vehicle. Or there's a lot of us detailers that get a vehicle that come into our shop or mobile that, you know, a customer goes, hey, I just bought this vehicle, and we go see it and it's got under 100 miles and we go, huh. This isn't in great shape for being on 100 miles. What was your perspective when you had a vehicle in your shop that had under 100 miles on it? How was it?
Yeah, so we had a vehicle last week, a brand new 4Runner, 102 miles when it got to my shop. So basically where this guy picked this up, it's not more than the couple stops he made were basically the mileage on it. I mean, it had under normal delivery miles on it. So brand new,
because most of the 100 mile took it. There's a lot of GMs and upper sales managers that'll take some cars and they'll just take them home for a couple of days. It's nothing crazy, but it's like to use the vehicle, right? Maybe test it, make sure it's okay.
Didn't even have that. So no, 102 miles by the time I got to my shop, and where he bought it, it wasn't very much more than, you know, driving to his house and here. You know, I mean, he was pretty close of putting all the mileage on it. TRD Pro, very nice vehicle. He bought for his wife, and you know, it's one she wanted. And he stopped at a shop right when he picked it up, and he thought he was going to hire the shop. And you know, this is the interesting part of the story. For all of you that are big supporters of all of these certifications, this guy probably has the most hanging on his wall of anybody, wouldn't you think? I mean, you actually know this person. I mean, it's a lot of certifications, and a lot of that's what he's built his legacy on, and great for him. But essentially, he gets, with 102 miles, a deep two-step correction and a coating quoted to him. The price wasn't out of whack. To this guy, when he was explained the two-step correction, got kind of worried. He's like, you know I don't know what I'm looking at. I'm not the foremost expert, but that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So he doesn't buy at that shop, and he happens to call one of his friends that I'm connected to, just loosely know, and he goes, hey, just give Nick a call. He'll shoot you straight. That guy leaves that shop. After getting it back to his house, he goes to that shop. Then he comes directly here after talking to that shop. And I go, well, let's pull it into the shop and let me just get a light on it. Let me see, is there like major damage on it? It's because it's that gray color. It's kind of hard to see in the sun sometimes if something's got major damage. I didn't want to do something quick, walk around, because there's shade in different spots. And I said, just pull it in. I pull it in. I've never seen a Toyota in this shape, to be very upfront.
Like that bad?
No, like that good. Toyota's, as you know, very, very poor system. But this one is in really good shape. I mean, this is kind of my C8 Corvette experience. Like, I couldn't believe when I started seeing C8 Corvettes, I'm like, something good's going on at that factory that they haven't had anywhere else in the Chevy family. So that was kind of, I let him come back in the shop and see it, because I could tell he was nervous, right? He's like, I feel like I've had somebody lie to me. Didn't use those words, but you know, that gut feeling. He's like, I just don't understand. So I pointed out some things. I said, hey, there's just some light sanding marks and some D nib marks and some little things here and there, but this is in really good shape, man. I said, we easily can take most of this stuff out pretty quickly. Matter of fact, if you want to leave it here, we can do a quick one step and a 3-year coating. Here's the price. You can pick this up in, you know, 4 to 5 hours. And he's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. The interesting part of this was when he started asking me questions. And he's like, you know, why wouldn't you do a two-step correction? That's what that guy wanted to do. And I said, one, your car doesn't need it. If your car did need it, I would present it to you, but I'd also present the facts of, I find it really hard to believe that I would ever really want to do a harsh two-step on a Toyota paint system.
All right, let me pause right there for a second.
Yeah.
So how does somebody that has these certifications, mm-hmm. has gone through all the different stuff, listen, you can... Not even just this guy, right? This is a common phenomenon throughout the industry. So yep. We do know who that, like, but it's not really about that guy, right? It's really about overall so many people that yep. have hung their hats on, these people are going to certify me, and so I'm going to get their certification. These people say this, so I'm going to grab that, and I'm going to grab all these things that I'm going to put on my wall, and I'm going to wear on my shirt, and I'm going to hang their banner, and I'm going to put myself, you know, that they are telling me that I'm right.
Yep.
But that guy couldn't look at a vehicle and go, hey, well, it doesn't need all this. I really need to do this, this, and this. He couldn't do that?
Couldn't probably isn't the right word.
Oh.
Has a belief system of, when I put a coating on, I'm going to do two steps, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and this is quote-unquote the right way.
Cool. So it's not that they taught him wrong, or they didn't give him enough skill set. And it wasn't that, you know, hey, the certifications didn't, so to in a sense, like we're not saying that those certifications are put something wrong in his head. It was just the idea that, hey, my philosophy in business, so to speak, would mean I've got to do this.
Yep. And we also know he could have charged this guy for two steps and done one. I mean, happens. That happens.
Can't say it doesn't happen. Can't say it doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, look, PPF shops all the time, tint shops all the time. Tint shops will charge for ceramic tint and put on carbon tint and cut costs and tell people they put carbon on. Or PPF shops will tell you, yeah, we paint corrected your car, but they'll just slap the PPF on there. And because it hides everything, who's the wiser? Right? So it's also about, I don't know. I know this customer knew too much and said too much that it wasn't his words being parroted. It's what he was told at the last shop. Let's just say it that way, right? He would have been a professional detailer the way he talked because he took what that guy told him and he brought it here to talk to me about it. You follow what I'm saying? So the thing that I guess I look at here, when he started to question me, and he had every right to, it wasn't negative at all. He was a really, really thoughtful guy. And I looked at him and I go, you know what, man? Anybody that's been doing this for any amount of time that you want to be in business with would look at Toyota paint and tell you one thing. There's very few cars that oxidize as fast as Toyota paint.
Hmm.
There's very few cars with such a fragile paint system, right? They probably, if you talk to most body shops, they tend to have a lot of repaints, especially that Toyota white gets real chalky really quickly. I said, so even if you came in here and you demanded a two-step, I would try to talk you out of it because I know about Toyota. And I want to keep as much paint on that surface as I can because I have a belief, man, that that's what you're supposed to do. And also there's another key point. He keeps cars for 10 years.
Okay, before we get to that, let me just give you the fact about the Toyota and the paint that you know. And I want to pause to go, hey, listener, you think that it's common knowledge, but it's not. I even had a guy that's detailed for me for many years. I told you about it. You've met him. We had a Toyota in here. It was an older one. It was a command, but Camry, and you know, and I just there were some problems on the paint, and I go, hold on, man, you know, we can't just go in and start digging into this. We don't know what this clear coat's like, and I had to kind of start talking to him about what manufacturer. He had no clue. He's been detailing for I don't know how long for me, right? So everybody go, oh, well, you didn't tell how the y'all telling all your people? Like, come on, like the amount of people that actually know this information, it's not even 0.1%. It's got to be 0.001. Like, how many people actually get privileged to this information?
Well, and how many people really pay attention, right? I mean, the way I learned this is you see enough Toyotas in your career, you go, give that scratch on your head like, oh, man, Toyota paint just doesn't hold up.
So is that a detailer or is that a car guy? We jump back and forth to this discussion. Are detailers car guys? I don't know. Not all of them are. But is the actual marriage between it all, is the person who can look at enough Toyotas and know, hey, this is the way Toyota is, and I've detailed enough Toyotas, then I know this is the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have that Rolodex in your brain, right? You got to pay attention. It's just like we have the GM Black conversation all the time. Everybody's going, oh, it's the worst.
Still confused.
Okay, still confused. And it's Toyota has a very fragile, what I would call cheap paint system. They just don't, you know, this is a company that's hung its hat on, our cars are going to run forever. They haven't hung their hat on, our cars look awesome, okay? They just hung their hat on developing those engines. And again, I will say this. This vehicle out of the factory was as good as I've ever seen. And maybe Toyota turned the corner in the last 3 years. And maybe Toyota's in a better spot now. I'm unwilling to do a service that takes more clear coat off a Toyota if it's unnecessary. Because I grew up in a time, and this word gets lost a lot, but it shouldn't. We're here to preserve the car. The number one reason to put PPF on a car is to do what? Preserve it from getting rock chips, UV protection, keep it in good shape. The number one reason to put in a ceramic coating to me is that it's a preservation product. Okay. It takes the damage for the clear coat. Right. And here's a guy telling me my wife kept her last car for 10 years. I can never get him to trade it. Why would I hatchet that paint? Why would I hatchet that paint? Unnecessarily weakening this, because here's what's going to happen. And I asked him this question directly. I said, look, man, you're really in the price range for our 3-year coating package. What's the odds, even if I remind you and your wife, that she's going to bring this in another time? He goes, look, man, I'd love to tell you we'll have it in here in 3 years. I'd love to tell you she's going to take great care of it. I know my wife. This thing is living on a prayer. Okay? I appreciate that. So
that's what
this guy
can do. I can appreciate it.
If this guy gives me all that information, and a two-step is completely unnecessary, it wouldn't have got the car any better. Let me just put it that way. The only way to make this vehicle better, just so everybody's aware, was to actually sand the texture out of the clear coat to take the orange peel out. If I didn't do that, a two-step wasn't going to magically give me any better result when I analyzed the car. So I was just going to do it to do it. And now I've put that clear coat and that car and that owner in a worse position because I just have this belief system of when I do a coating. Or I'm trying to take advantage of a customer. I wasn't there, and I don't know this person, and I don't know how they run their business day to day. I don't assume anything. I assume they have the right intentions. I have no issue with the shop. And by the way, when he brought up the shop, I gave my standard answer, never heard of them. There was no bashing of the shop. There was just talking about why I do the things I do. But we've gotten so far away from preservation at a time when clear coats and paint systems have never been worse across the board.
And at a time, which you said on a recent episode, people are keeping their vehicles much longer. Like,
yeah, I mean, we've essentially, I mean, by the data, we're seeing car ownerships jump by not 6 months. We're seeing them jump by 2 years is the projection that people are going to go from 3.5 years to 5.5 years, 5.5 years to 7.5 years of how long they keep their car because of what happened during the pandemic.
And what it translates to 2024, right? Like it is the pandemic, but reality of 2024 is, hey, I'm going to keep my vehicle longer.
Yeah, it's just more expensive.
It just is what
right?
It is.
It's more expensive. So if you're not in that wealthy 1%, you know, you're paying $85,000 for a Tahoe, $75,000 for a Tahoe. You're used to paying $45,000. Hey, look, man, you may make some decisions to keep it a little longer.
All right. So a fun game that I've started is as I go to each soccer match and each place, I like to look around the parking lot. I'm not looking like you and your daughter do to look at the dirtiness or cleanliness. I know what I'm going to have.
Yeah.
I'm looking, and I love, listen, C10 Nick, he said, and this is where I think is the journey of a detailer that's also a car guy. Might not know all the specs of every car or engine or, you know, this, you know, but can look at cars, know who the manufacturer are, know how to value and take care of a vehicle. Quality in a okay, hold on, Nick. I saw this the other day. I'll have to show you the sign. There's a new car lot down the street that's called Quality Value.
I'll be there next week. Let's go check him out.
I just went, wait, Nick needs that. Like, that's a Nick place,
yeah.
But you know, as C10 Nick is at a stoplight and he's going, hey, which cars have ceramic coatings? I do that, you know, you walk through yeah. Yeah, like this is part of what a detailer that's a car guy would do is examine the way a car is taken care of when they're seeing things. So, you know, is this a, you're talking about preservation, and you know, there's this whole world of detailers that are coming up through the ranks, and they're just not educated about. Listen, I wanted to even say in one of that comment earlier with that guy, I want to say, you know, are you calling this science or uneducated? Like, if we got to just say there's an uneducated, and that's why I admitted myself and admitted the guy that details the cars for me. Like, he was uneducated that if we polished more and buffed more on this clear coat, that it might actually go away. And I had to walk him through that, you know, years and how many details, like, never even thought about it. And I go, yeah, man, it's not us. It's the manufacturer. But at the same time, it is us because we're not telling enough people.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, very few people. I maybe see one or two guys that talk that way on YouTube. I know I was probably the first on you know, our platform to really bring preservation, that was my mindset, has been my mindset forever. And if you really want to start working on valuable vehicles, and I know that's a lot of people, whether you want to own them and take care of them, or you're going to be somebody that wants to have that in your business, you only need to hatchet on one valuable vehicle and screw it up, and you're going to learn your lesson that your way is not the right way.
But most of us don't think we'll ever do it. And so we see people on social that, you know, whether or not they were detailers and now they're trainers, doesn't matter. Like, but they're telling people how to take care of paint, how to cut paint. And there's a lot of detailers that, you know, we mentioned the Mecca earlier of New Belgium, and going, like, there's this idea that you'll reach nirvana. Like, yep, you'll reach this place that when you can cut enough paint, you become this detailer.
Yep. It's an obsession, right? I mean,
why do people
industry
want to do two-step and you don't?
I'll do a two-step when it calls for it, when it's the right situation. I'll gladly sand a vehicle if somebody's going to pay for it. I'm not doing any of that stuff out of the goodness of my heart, which is what a lot of those guys end up doing. I mean, you can talk to a lot of these guys off the record, man. They find it very hard to charge for the level of sanding they're doing. They know that they're in a market of 1% of 1%. And so the other thing is, man, you know, taking care of a show car that's got, you know, 10 mils of paint and clear coat, those guys are sanding on cars that have all kinds of room. They actually have been cleared and painted for the whole idea of sanding them down. And so that's awesome. Like, that's fun work to be around. That's fun work to see. That's great talent. We should really celebrate that stuff. But Tesla Black, which people have been putting PPF on and had it come off, may not be the time for the sanding block and the two-step correction. It's okay that those two things are coexisting. There are absolute times to cut the hell out of paint. There are other times, which is where most people listening to us find themselves, that there's a little bit more finesse to this conversation, that not everything should be two-stepped. I would love if all we had to do was two-step every car, because it would take guesswork out of it. But if anybody's watched a Tesla or a Honda Black out of the factory, or some of the quality control issues Tesla battled for years and years and years and still has, where people were actually laying PPF down and the paint just came off the bumper. Are you going to two-step that car? And we've had a couple situations with Teslas that I'll bring to this story. Real estate agents, for everyone that doesn't know, drive a lot of miles. Good real estate agents anyway. And I have two real estate agents that I know that are on the very high end of the market that both have put 100,000 miles on their Teslas. Both of them are oxidized and had to be wrapped because of somebody that was referred to them. I didn't know these people back then. Referred to them to do paint correction and ceramic coating. You know why they started oxidized?
Right. You still don't know?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this right now. Guess what happened? They heavily cut these paint systems, and now they're beyond repair. They're repaint situations. I have two Teslas in that boat. So we all think this stuff doesn't happen, and we always talk about the buffer trails and the hack and look at the buffer trails this person left. Agreed, man. We all hate seeing that. How many underlying issues are people causing because they go into a fragile paint system like a Tesla paint, a Toyota paint, they do a heavy two-step correction, that person keeps the car, maybe they don't care for it the way they should, which has to be in your design of business that this person may neglect their vehicle at some point. That should be your thought process. And now those paint systems are oxidized.
No, hold on. You said design of business should be in that process. Whoa, hold on. No, my design of business is done by the certifications that I got on the wall and what they tell me goes into a detail because they're the brand that they sell this or, hey, but they're the people that do this. Don't argue with them, Nick. Some of them might even be chemists.
Yeah. So
they might be the science behind a diminishing abrasive, and you don't know.
Yeah. And look, man, I'll say this. I'm glad this guy found us. I'm glad we were able to ease his mind. And I'm telling everyone out there, in my entire career, manufacturers have never put more paint back on. It's never happened, right? We started at 5.5, 6 mils. We went down to 5. We went down to 4.5. Now we're hovering 3.5 to 2.5, depending on manufacturer. And if they can find a way to get it down to 1.5, they're going to get it down to 1.5. But the odds of the days where they're going to start putting 6 back on, I think they're gone. And so I operate, number one, analyze the car. This car wouldn't have benefited from a two-step. It didn't have any deep defects on that level. So we're now doing things for the sake of doing things is always the worst decision you can make when you're touching a car or when you're in business. Doing things for the sake of doing them, man, doesn't get you very far.
Agreed. And I would say most of us would go, absolutely. But we don't realize that we might do things for the sake of doing things, like because I have this in my package.
Yep.
This is the way my business runs. This is my belief system. This is my package. So now you're saying that basically that I should not have packages, which you have said, but people always want packages. They always want pricing. No,
I think you can have packages. I don't think the package is the problem. It's not offering them a package that doesn't work for their vehicle, right? So if your two-step is $2,000 with the coating, what you should know what it's going to cost that customer if you bang that down to a one-step for the same coating. That's just logical.
Share your analogy of the thermostat and the AC unit.
Yeah, so one of the things we get said to us a lot and we hear a lot around, you know, when people have posts on detailing groups is this idea that we need to go and be like the mechanics. You know, look at how they price things and look at how they operate. Look at how they, you know, get certifications and look, who cares that all that stuff's not true when somebody's saying it. So on the face of it, it's always been a BS argument. But how many of you would go for an oil change? I'm going to pay $50 for an oil change. And you go to the oil change and the shop looks at you and he goes, so your oil change is going to cost $3,500. Your sign says 50. Yeah, that's just to kind of get you in here. But we tear the engine down every time we do an oil change. I mean, that's the right way to do it. And we got to tear it down, make sure there's no problems. We'd all find that strange. We'd all be like, what the hell is this shop doing? What's the difference than what this guy tried to do to this 4Runner? What's the difference? Hey, man, my thermostat went out on my AC unit in my car. Well, you know what, guy? We're going to have to take out the whole AC unit, not just the thermostat. We got to do it the right way. And the only way to do it the right way is to take your whole AC out of your car, vents and all. Check what's going on. So we're all in this mindset. Or people are, we're not. We want to be like the mechanics and legitimize this thing. Cool. You realize mechanics just fix what's broken. They don't tear an engine down every time they do an oil change. They don't rip out an AC unit every time they got to replace the thermostat. They don't do that. They do exactly what the car needs.
Is that almost like another version of snake oil?
Marty, I don't know what you call it. I think it's a belief system problem. If you're not looking after the customer in the car, and this goes for somebody that owns their own stuff. If you're not looking after that car, man, I don't know why you're doing any of this. That's why it's real hard for me to understand. Like, I want people to know it's real hard to have this conversation without saying some explicit things because I don't understand it. I'm not here to screw up a car long term, especially a 4Runner that we know is going to eventually probably have 350,000 miles on it. That's why they're built. Okay? Now, that may not be that owner, but that could be the second owner, the third owner, the fourth owner. Why should that car that's supposed to last a lifetime on the paint system, if it's cared for, and we're the first people caring for it, why would we set it on a road for a repaint situation anywhere in its life and be anywhere, any part of that? That part doesn't, it doesn't equate to me. And I think people will say a lot of things and they have a lot of beliefs and I understand all of them, but really think about the mechanic thing. You went in for an oil change and this dude wanted to rebuild your engine with no miles on it. You'd be like, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. It's also the craziest thing I ever heard that somebody wanted to two-step a car that there was no defense of. And I know we think this is isolated, but I can go to every Facebook group and watch how many cars are getting two-stepped every day and go, I can watch people on YouTube who buy, you know, low mileage cars that are rare cars. And the first thing they grab is a wool pad or a microfiber pad. And they're like, yeah, I don't think this really needs it, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's like, what? What are we doing? And this isn't me like, hey, I'm right, they're wrong. I'm just saying out loud, if we all say it out loud, it seems like it's maybe a knucklehead decision. And trust me, I've made a plenty of knucklehead decisions, some that have cost me a lot of money. I burnt paint on a Ferrari in my career, and not a cheap one. I know what screwing up looks like. And so maybe some of that experience has made me this way. But we just don't talk about preserving cars. And I don't care, man, if it's a Bronco, a Jeep, a Ferrari, a Honda Civic. I just don't think that this whole thing's about hatching away at anybody's paint system unnecessarily. I just don't think that's the goal here. And I don't think anybody would think that's the goal. But it happens every day. And it happens in shops that have, quote unquote, taken more trainings than anybody in the city. And I don't fault or say that I'm right. I'm just asking, does it sound like it makes sense? If it needed two steps, guys, I'd tell you. This was the most easy one step we've done in my business in the last year. Hell, the Bentley we just picked up was in worse shape.
I think the biggest takeaway from this is there's two words, belief system. Right? Like, as you were saying that, I went back to a moment that I had with a detailer years and years ago that I told you about, where I looked at this young detailer and she was a lady and I go, ma'am, you're going to find there's a lot of people in this industry that want to make money off of you. They're just going to want to be people that want to make money with you. And I thought of that because I go, you know what? I want to say to the listeners, you're going to have a lot of cars that you can make money off of. Why not make some money with them? Right? Why you got to go after it so hard at this moment? Can you take a deep breath? Can you want to be in business for years and years and years to come? Can you want to see this car again? Can you appreciate just the car for a second? Not even your own self and your own business. Can we just be car people for a second and go, man, this is a beautiful car. Man, I really like this. This is a car. Like, I didn't want to do
good job. What a good job Toyota did. Like, to get me this car in this shape that probably only had 3 to 4 real defects. The rest of them were kind of probably at the dealership taking the adhesive off and taking the plastics off. Like, can't we just say, hey, we got a win here? You know, Toyota got us a good one. I mean, it's like what I told everybody about C8. Hey, can't we just kind of like clap it up and go, hey, we got a good one? You know, like, good for them. I mean, why can't we do that? I mean, why can't we just be like, hey, man, they're listening. At least they're catching on. But
we got to fall on a sword, don't we?
Oh, dude. I was in shock. The guy, like, saw a look on my face, and he's like, yeah, it didn't sound right to me. I'm like, no, man, there's some stuff here. This car needs a little cleanup. We'll see you in 5 hours. And by the way, I was done and talking to you in, like, four. That's with the coating application. That's with a trim product we were testing. That's with another product. I'd have been done in no time, and there were no defects left behind. The paint was right where it needed to be. And by the time he picked it up, he's like, man, this looks even better. Okay, man, we solved the problem. I really love for you. They live out, so we can't be in our maintenance program. They literally don't actually live in the city limits of Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is a big place. But I said, hey, man, I'm going to text you every 3 months, and I hope you can find a way to drive us up here because it's just going to be better off for you. And he goes, yeah, man, we paid a lot for this car. It was a lot for him. And he was still willing to pay four figures to get it cared for. This wasn't a cheapskate. This wasn't a bad guy. And by the way, Toyota did it right for once. Can't we all just take a win here and say this was a good thing? But no, we gotta put doubt in this guy's mind. You know, the only break we got as an industry that he went to a second shop. That guy could have very easily driven home and go, oh man, they're all scamming. They're all this. I mean, just think if he doesn't attach to somebody that can get him to somebody to talk to that made him feel better.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for doing that. And I hope other listeners go, listen, let's see some cars that we can be with, not just off of.
Yeah, I love it. Great job. Yeah. All right, brother. Talk to you guys next week.